Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the owner and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice Sports news and analysis. Well,
we're here.
Yeah.
That counts for something, right?
You know, I guess you can say that. I don't know. I guess one thing I was thinking about after this game is that it's good to be back in a position where you can actually be really disappointed in a loss like this. Like, I don't know, for the first 4 weeks we were like, yeah, you know, things are going great. Don't look at the record. Like, let's find all the positives. And all of last season was a complete rebuild. And so at least they're close enough that we can be upset about this.
You could be pissed off as losing as a 2-touchdown underdog in overtime. I mean, so, no lipsticks on a pig, but it is what it is. at least Rice fans have earned the right to be upset.
So any housekeeping items before we get back to Louisiana Tech?
A couple of things. So let's see. Starting up, we have a little bit of a wrinkle in the schedule. So Rice will play UAB, and then we'll have an off weekend. And so while we're doing that and previewing the next game, we're going to go ahead and open things up and do a bit of a mailbag with you guys. So if you have any questions for us, this will be taking these after the UAB game. So I guess it'll be, the halfway point of the season. So you can go ahead and send those on Twitter at the Roost Pod or podcast at theroost.com. Get them to me or Carter. We'll pull them all together and we'll grab a couple and we'll kind of debrief them following the UAB game in addition to our regular breakdown. So there'll be that piece. And then a couple bit of news items from Rice this week. Bloomgren has said that Wiley Green is going to be the full-time starter at quarterback. I don't think that really comes as a surprise after seeing how Wiley was able to move the ball, and he was kind of the guy that Rice trusted down the stretch at the end of the Louisiana Tech game. So we have a QB1 for now. Bloomgren has said that Tom Stewart is going to have a role, but I'd imagine that's kind of like he was in there for was like a jet sweep or something to Zane Knipe or a couple plays here and there, but he will not be arbitrarily inserted at any point in this game because so I think that alone will be good news. And then more good news, I think Rice has a kicker, a definitive kicker, and it will be Chris Barnes. So after first learning that he might take some kicks the week leading up to Army, which was not that long ago, he is now the Owls' primary place kicker after Will Harrison missed a kick against Louisiana Tech. So those are the big positional changes. I think good news, Carter?
Yeah, for sure. You know, now that Wiley is fully healthy and we saw him kind of be the more effective of the two against Louisiana Tech, you know, where you can kind of go back and remember there's a reason that he was the coaches thought he was the better option for the team coming into the season. And I think that's kind of been borne out certainly in the last game. So it's good to see that that'll be solidified going forward. And then, yeah, I definitely wanted to talk about Chris today, because as much as you didn't want them to be kicking field goals in some of those situations, and as much as having another miss was frustrating, I was really impressed with Chris Barnes because, you know, he had two opportunities to kick in this game, both in really high pressure situations. I mean, neither of them was a particularly long kick. I mean, they were both between like 35 and
35, something like that.
Yeah. One of them was 37. And I think the other one was about that long, too. So not super long kicks, but definitely ones that are missable for college kickers, and both, you know, one late in the game to give Rice the lead, and then one in overtime, which is about as high pressure of a situation as you can get for a college kicker, and he nailed them both. So, you know, props to him on that. Kicking is not the most mentally easy position, no matter the circumstances, and to be a guy who, you know, has took his first collegiate kick a couple weeks ago, and now had to do it in two pressure situations in this game, for him to hit both of those, I thought was really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not very common in any level of this sport for guys to do the place kicking and the punting. So I talked to Chris earlier this week, and he said that him and Jack had been talking back, and Jack Fox, of course, had been talking back and forth and swapping notes as Jack handled both duties for Rice to some degree last year. So I thought that was a interesting little passing of the torch that I mean, coming into the season, we didn't even know if Chris Barnes would be punting, let alone handling both. So that's a pretty cool for him to pick up the mantle after his old buddy. So good news on that front. And then a couple injury things to get to. Obviously, we saw Zane Knipe on the field a couple times against Louisiana Tech. So he is healthy and good and will continually be phased into the offense. And they have a couple packages in addition to what we've seen from him. So that'll be good to get him more involved. Rice needs somebody that can go fast, and he can go really, really fast. So that's the good news. On maybe the more not great news, Reagan Williams, the fullback, is still sidelined for at least the near future. We don't really have a specific timetable on what his return is going to be, but I thought Brendan Suckley has handled himself pretty well. Had a great block ceiling off the edge on Aston's, I guess, second touchdown run against Louisiana Tech. And then Juma Ottaviano is out of his big boot, and he has a little bit of a, like an ankle brace, kind of like. I'm not a medical professional, so do not hold me. It's a little piece of plastic on his ankle. So he's wearing that, and I was talking to him this week, and he said he's hoping to get that off soon. So at that point, it'll be phasing him back into shape and getting into drills, and it'll be a process before he gets back. But, you know, when that happened, I kind of reported that we were expecting kind of a redshirt season for him would be most likely or optimistic is what Rice was thinking about. And so halfway done with the season now, it's kind of looking, if he takes, you know, a couple weeks to get ready, we might get him back either, I guess, the game right before the bye or after the bye when Rice has the second bye, when Rice mm-hmm. has a couple games left. So no official definitive date back, but we're at the point where, you know, we're starting to see him walking around on the field with no crutches and boots, and that is very, very exciting.
So for Louisiana Tech, it was so interesting because those first two drives on offense, they looked fantastic. I mean, it was just exactly what you wanted to see from this team in terms of what they were doing and how they were executing on offense. And I just felt like watching it that it was like, this is, you know, everything that we hoped for when this team hit conference play, that now that the talent disparity was a little more even, that
this was what was supposed to happen.
Right.
Rice was supposed to be able to enforce their will up front, open up running lanes, spread people out. They did it all for 20 minutes.
And then it just kind of all went downhill after that. I mean, it was, you know, I thought the you know, we're recording this on Wednesday. I thought the piece you had up today about the offense and the play calling, I think it was Coach Ashfield in there, the O-line coach, talking about it. I thought he kind of hit the nail on the head as far as the stuff I've gone back and looked at. It wasn't as though it just completely dissolved from that point on. It was just that, like, it seemed like every play there was one little thing here, one little thing there, one missed block, one missed assignment. That just, it goes to show you how much, especially in the run game, as much as Rice wants to run the ball, how much that is such a choreographed thing in terms of that everybody kind of has to be doing their job. And if one thing goes wrong, it can completely blow up a whole play. And, you know, by the time this posts, in fact, at the time of recording, it's just been posted, but my film room will be up. And I talked about the play you referenced earlier, Aston Walter's first touchdown runs. You don't have to have every guy dominate his man on every play. You just have to have everybody do their job well enough to give the runner an opportunity. And that was what they did on that play. And that was what they were doing for all of those first two drives. But it wasn't like they were just that the whole thing just fell apart after that. It was like they were this close, and if they could have tweaked something here and tweaked something there and tweaked something there on every other play, it feels like it could have gone completely differently.
Yeah, and I think especially so the first two drives while it was in, offense went down, scored a touchdown. Tom came in for the third drive, and he had a pass that was, I think it just was just barely underthrown close to the sticks that could have been right at a first down that maybe gets the drive moving, but that fell incomplete, three and out, Rice punted. And then it's crazy that Rice only got four drives in the first half. But the second drive that Tom came in got all the way down. The offense was moving well, and the interception thrown in the end zone, which up to that point, Rice quarterbacks had not thrown any interceptions this season, and they haven't really had many pickable balls or misplaced balls to that degree. And that was, I mean, not going to kill a guy for one bad decision, but that did never look like it was going to get caught by Rice Owl, just with all of the traffic. Not coming away with points there was huge, but from the drive standpoint, without that finishing play, I think if you can tell me you have three plays that went the length of the field and you got into the red zone with scoring opportunities with one, three and out, like if you can have that every half, I think you take it, right?
I mean, even just in generally, if you project that out to a larger number of drives, right? If you get touchdowns on 50% of your possessions, a quarter of the time you go three and out, and a quarter of the time you get into the red zone, like you feel pretty good about that, right? That's you know, a touchdown two out of every three scoring opportunities. That's you know, there are certainly, we have certainly seen worst halves of offensive football from Rice this season. So,
and even, you know, then I think even in how good it was, it was able to overcome some things. The second drive, Brian Chafe in the center snapped one sky high over Wiley's head, and they had to chase it down the backfield. I think it was a 14-yard loss. I want to say it was on first down.
Yeah, because they converted like a second and 25.
It was right after that loss. It was like a 15-yard play to Rosner on the sideline. And then another completion to get the first down. And that, in a nutshell, I mean, I'd have to think. I'm trying to remember if Rice converted any first downs last year after starting in second and 24. Maybe a couple, but for the most part, that in itself would have been a drive killer that Rice wouldn't have been able to recover from. And not only did they recover, they were able to punch it in the end zone again. So I think that point, the resiliency, like even at the point where they were not executing as perfectly as they had, like the first drive was basically flawless, they were still able to get points. So things were working, even if everything wasn't as precise as the offense needed to be, which, and I think by the time we got to the second half, like you mentioned my conversation that I had with Coach Ashfield, he said he literally was able to go back, look at the film, and find one guy and the same play or a similar play where he made the block correctly in the second quarter, and then in the third quarter, he whiffed. And he was able to do that with just about everybody on the offensive line, fullbacks, you name it. There was just, for whatever reason, the inconsistency there. And that was enough for those cracks to emerge. And then the third quarter offensively was dreadful. They couldn't get anything going.
Yeah, they missed a field goal and then had, I think, three straight punts. The last of those punts was on the first play of the fourth quarter. And you know, that first drive where they missed a field goal, that was another. I mean, it really didn't start till after that because they went 57 yards in nine plays on that drive. You know, that's, and just couldn't finish, missed a short field goal. That was. A 36-yarder, but still. And then after that, three and out, negative 3 yards, four plays, 17 yards, three and out, minus 1 yard. And then in the fourth quarter, another three and out for 6 yards. That sequence right there, those four drives where they went four straight punts and gained a total of 19 yards on four successive drives, that was really the killer sequence.
Yeah, and I mean, even in that moment, like, we didn't see the offense fold because they were able to respond and get the game to overtime, as, you know, imperfect as, I think, what was that, five successive drives that ended up in the missed field goal or a punt.
Mm-hmm.
They were still able to turn things around and keep going. I think there was, I know that there's been a lot of frustration on how that sequence at the end of the fourth quarter played out when they essentially just settled for that field goal with 2:51 left in the game rather than push it. But at that point, is it, I mean, we're done talking about moral victories, but are you content driving 14 plays? Was the tied their longest drive of the game by mm-hmm. play count, 7 minutes. That was as successful as their offense had been in what, an hour and a half of real time?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there's a right answer there, but
yeah, it was, I don't know. It's a lot of the same stuff we've said all season. You know, we're done with moral victories, but there are positives to take out of this. You know, we haven't had any of those games like, say, you know, to bring up a topical opponent, the UAB game from last season where, you know, they got shut out 42-0 at home. There hasn't been a game so far, and that includes this one, where there's not something you can point to and say, like, that's a positive sign going forward. And, you know, to move to the other side of the ball, I mean, we just continue, the defense continues to exceed all expectations. I mean, they allowed one touchdown in the first half, at one point forced like 4-5 straight punts over late first half, early second half.
Came into the game as the number one offense in Conference USA, and through the first half, like, completely flat. This is an offense that scored, was it 41 points against Florida International last week?
Mm-hmm.
And they had one, their first drive where they came out, they were able to go down the field and score. But after that, like, they couldn't get anything going on the ground game. I thought Jamar Smith was good, not great. And his receivers had a good amount of drops and didn't really help him out. I mean, he had to throw under a lot of pressure, which is credit to Rice. They had 3 sacks on the night and first career sack for DeBraylon Carroll, which was nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, defensively, they were harassing Louisiana Tech, and they were going nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, 3 sacks, 2 additional non-sack tackles for loss, 5 QB hurries. I said before the game that a big key for me was going to be, can, with the pressure that they want to get and the different stuff they want to do up front on this defense, can they finally start getting home? And they did. So that was another positive sign. You know, Smith played fine, but with what Rice was giving him in terms of the incompletions they forced and the coverage they were in and the tackling they had, he averaged just barely over 5 yards an attempt, which is not very high, especially for an offense that's as prolific and wants to pass as much as theirs does. So that was a really, really positive sign to do that well in pass defense for me. And then the rush defense.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, for his accuracy is pretty accurate, but had done extremely well, and he is able to throw deep and push the ball down the field. And the last 3 games, 40-yard pass versus Grambling State, 49 yards versus Bowling Green. He had a 54-yarder against FIU. His longest passes against Rice, like, they really came in that fourth quarter drive where they mm-hmm. went down and kicked that field goal to tie it up. And they were both, I think, like, corner back shoulder throws on that right sideline, that far sideline, and they went 22 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But everything was in front of the defense. He didn't get anything over anybody's head. And Adrian Hardy is one of the 3 or 4 best wide receivers in Conference USA. And he had 6 catches for 7-8 yards and a good touchdown where he just beat somebody out, which you can live with that combo. But I mean, 12 targets for Hardy. He caught 6 balls and really was not the menace that we've seen number one receivers fare on this defense in years past, and even a couple times this year against, you know, Wake Forest and Texas.
Mm-hmm. Wake Forest now 5-0, by the way.
Ranked Wake Forest, right?
Yeah.
And hey, if North Carolina can come a 2-point conversion, I know this is off topic, but from beating Clemson, you know, consider Wake.
Wake is
great.
You
never know. Wake is great. I am on Team Wake to the college football playoff. Let me tell you.
Yeah. And then the run defense, obviously, I know both of the touchdowns were on the ground, but I mean, one of those was Smith on a scramble in overtime. And, you know, if you held this offense to 17 points in regulation, you know, from a, you know, you always want to focus on things that you could have done better. But like from a defense perspective, like holding them to 17 points in regulation, you feel like that should have been enough. Right. Like you feel like that was an effort from the defense that deserved to win the game. So, the running defense was stellar. 22 carries for 84 yards. They really didn't get a whole lot going on the ground at all other than those two touchdown runs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the only real concern that we saw from the defense was that last drive of that fourth quarter where after Rice had tied it up. And I mean, you could feel the energy in the stadium when Barnes hit that field goal and it went through. It was a, oh, dang, I think we just did this, because the Tech offense had been, I mean, silent. And for them to be able to go down the field and hit those successive 22-yard plays, it was kind of a point where after you'd seen the secondary be as dominant and the pass rush be as successful as it had been, it was, hey, I mean, it kind of came out of left field. And that's, Rice had a drive against Baylor at the end of the first half that resulted in a quick touchdown that, you know, proved to be the definitive score in that game. And you've had a defense that I think arguably against Baylor now and Tech has played at a dominant, dare I say, level for 58 and a half minutes with maybe a minute of, ooh, I wish we could have that one drive back. So I know from a defensive perspective, as much as it's really easy to look at the offense and say, oh, you know, 17, 20 points, it's not going to get it done. I know the defensive side of the room is saying, yeah, well, in this game, it 17 points should probably have gotten it done if they could have found one more stop. I mean, it's not it's not fair, but Rice was in a position with the lead with 2.5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. And I don't know. I get that line of thinking, certainly. And you want to see them be dominant in, you know, to not have that lapse in the most important moment. But the way I try to look at it as a fan, you know, from a coach's perspective, to me, that's fine. And, you know, I see this kind of perspective from Alabama fans all the time, where it's like they were great in 98% of the game, and then there was one part where they weren't great and that cost them. And I see fans get so upset about that, and I can understand that mentality from coaches because they want the best execution at all times. But I think I try to keep, in terms of the expectations that I have and the amount of, not pressure, because, you know, what, how much is the team paying attention to what I'm saying, you know, but the way I try to look at it is that in today's college football, from a defensive perspective, you cannot be perfect all the time. Offenses are too good.
Absolutely not.
The rules are too set up for offenses. The schemes are so advanced. In some ways it's like basketball sometimes. Like, great offense beats great defense sometimes. Sometimes there's just nothing you can do. And I'm not saying Rice couldn't have played better in these situations, but, you know, the way I look at it is I hate to just point to one drive and be like, well, if they had just stopped them right there, they would have won the game. When it's like, okay, but they did stop them a dozen times. And I don't want to be the person that sits there and nitpicks them for saying that, like, you know, why couldn't you stop them this time when they stopped them all these other times?
Absolutely. And I think that this was interesting. So Bloomgren brought the first. So Sunday is typically an off day for the team. The coaches will be working and getting the game plan ready and whatnot. But the first meeting is typically bright and early on Monday morning. So this Monday, Bloomgren brought the team together and had everybody take a look at some film. And he pulled out 16 plays, offense, defense, special teams, you name it. And just went through, if this guy makes this block, this play doesn't happen, we win the game. If this guy makes this kick, we win the game. If this guy catches his pass, and it's not that easy, but it was clear enough that the point where, and I think you're right in the fact that, you know, as a layperson, you look at this game and you can say that, okay, the defense was dominant, maybe not perfect, but exceptional. And the offense was really, really good for a part of it and then just kind of faded away. I think that's doesn't take much rocket science to get to that point. But I thought it was, for me, almost encouraging to see that from the defensive side to know, man, if they're really, really good right now, if they can clean up that last minute, that kind of hurry up offense execution, if Louisiana Tech is one of the best offenses in Conference USA, and they can only score 14 points, save that quick drive, like, is 17 points going to be enough to win a lot of the rest of the games that Rice is going to play? It could be.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And then as far as the secondary people that played well, I want to highlight Tyre Thornton. You know, he is kind of the jack of all trades that does just about everything for the defense. And Treshawn Chamberlain had a great game. Tyre Thornton over on the corner. We mentioned nobody getting behind people. My brain is smoke. I'm just this game flushing it all out of my system. Tyre Thornton had 3 pass breakups against Louisiana Tech. That was the high for any Rice defensive back to post this season. So I wanted to highlight that. He had a heck of a game and really shut down his side of the field extremely well.
While we're giving defensive shout-outs, obviously you mentioned DeBraylon Carroll getting his first set. Blaze Aldridge continues to be Blaze Aldridge. Another 13 tackles, half a tackle for loss, 6 by himself. So, you know, if you're handing out defensive helmet stickers here, I think he's got to be on your list, as he might be just about every week. You mentioned, I believe, Zane Knight, got his first action in this game. Jake Bailey also first posted his first 2 catches of his career, which was nice to see, getting those 2 talented young freshmen involved in the offense, and hopefully their roles will continue to grow going forward.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we've already hit offense a little bit, but bouncing back to that, to the ball, I think that they're, well, and I can say that they've done a lot of work on that side of the ball this week, just adding a couple more wrinkles. And I'm not promising that, you know, that you're going to wake up for UAB and it's going to be a 5 wide spread attack and everything's going to be different. We're not there. We're not overhauling yet, but you're going to see Zane and Jake and some other guys that are used in some creative ways that are going to help find ways to jumpstart the offense if and when they do get into a rut like that. So hopefully good things coming from that front. I know that Zane was on that, I guess, jet sweep that ended in a fumble. And I think Rice, that was another thing we didn't really hit on. Rice put the ball on the deck 6 times against Louisiana Tech and did not lose any of them. I think they were credited with 4 official fumbles. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about a lot of things that didn't go right for the offense. 4 fumbles, you don't lose any. That was... was some good fortune. So it wasn't all bad for the Owls. But that's pretty uncharacteristic for them because they don't turn the ball over. They do a good job of holding on to things. And one of those was that kind of weird wrinkle that they'd thrown in. And I think Tom Stewart had another one on a strip sack. So those were kind of not within the realm of the offense as it will be going forward. So you hope some of that gets cleaned up and phased out a little bit. But one thing to pay attention to going forward, for sure.
Yeah, that's and they almost certainly did get a little lucky. Like, you know, footballs are oddly shaped and they bounce weird. So,
and speaking of lucky, and we're giving shout outs, Wiley Green on fourth down, they did another one of those. What do you call it? It's a like a pitch back and then run it up between the guard and the tackle.
Mm-hmm.
That big power pitch.
Yeah.
They had a fourth down conversion in the second half with Charlie Booker running the ball that they flipped it back to him, and the offense was, or the defense was there in the backfield. So credit to Booker. He kind of turned it around and took it around the other side. And Wiley actually put the block that opened things up for him to pick up the first down. So I was like, he's a tough guy.
Yeah. So anyway, you can say that they certainly got lucky that they recovered all four of those fumbles, because over time, generally, teams will recover about 50% of fumbles. It just kind of trends that way. But also, like you said, that many fumbles is kind of uncharacteristic for this team. And there is a certain amount of luck involved in when a fumble kind of happens in the first place. Just, you know, if a defender gets an arm on the ball, it kind of happens at random. So they got lucky a bit in that they recovered all those fumbles, but they were also kind of unlucky in that they all happened in the first place. So, you know, on balance, I don't think that's much of a thing to look to one way or the other.
Whether it's fumbles or not, luck kind of balances. You saw that on one of the catches in that fourth quarter drive for Louisiana Tech with a toe tapper on the sideline where the guy just barely got a foot in and made an impressive catch. They ended up going back and reviewing, but I mean, as good as you're playing defense on that, like some of those come in and some of those bounce out. So over the long run, you'll be fine. And luck will break out about even. It's what you do with the rest of those possessions where you're not aided by a weird bounce or hurt by a weird bounce that makes them count. So it is what it is. Hopefully they, at least in the turnover department, things should be looking a bit optimistic on the UAB front if we want to go ahead and transition that way.
Yep. I'm tired of talking about Louisiana Tech. I want to get that game, the taste of that game out of my mouth.
Goodbye until next year.
Yeah. So UAB, my hometown team, grew up going to Blazers basketball games because nobody wants to go to Legion Field.
Do we have an inside man?
Yeah. Honestly, a huge credit to UAB over the last couple of years since the program has been revived. Obviously, there's a certain amount of energy there. So I'm glad they've kept that up just as a Birmingham native. But credit to the fans for turning out to those games, because Legion Field is a dump, and it's impressive to me that they've kept up that attendance while waiting on that new stadium to come in.
You realize anyway, that like that's the only part of the podcast that's going to get cut and passed around Birmingham for the rest of the week until this game starts.
They can't say anything to me about that. But yeah, UAB kind of hard to figure out this year. You know, their whole situation is so unique in terms of the program getting cut and coming back. And obviously that's a whole situation that would take far longer to go into. So we're not. But
somebody has told that story before, undoubtedly.
Yeah, a million times. But their roster construction was so unique the last 2 years with the kind of special eligibility rules they have and the number of JUCOs they had to bring to kind of balance out the roster. And now they're in a situation where it's like teams had a coach that was kind of on the outs that brought in a lot of JUCO guys to kind of give his team a jolt. And then the coach gets fired and those guys leave and you lose some transfers. And now you're transitioning from a 2-year cycle to a 4-year cycle. And so it leaves you in this very awkward roster state. And so really credit to UAB. We'll talk about their schedule in just a second, but like, in such a weird transition year that they're in, it's a credit to them and a credit to Bill Clark as a coach that they're 3-1 so far. But on that schedule, they barely scraped by an Alabama State team that is not one of the better teams in FCS, shall we say. And then they beat the crap out of a bad South Alabama team, so credit to them. They had a close-ish win over an Akron team that is like Rice, winless, but against a much, much worse schedule than Rice.
I thought Akron, did they go and beat UMass? Or did they lose to UMass?
They lost to UMass. They lost. And UMass is not very good either. So,
oh, man. Losing, I mean, Rice can complain about losing to who they've lost to, but losing to UMass, you don't want to be there.
Yeah, no. And then in their conference opener last week, UAB lost to Western Kentucky, and were probably pretty unlucky to do so because Tyler Johnson, their quarterback, we'll talk about him more in a second, but he threw four interceptions, and they still only lost by a touchdown. So, you know, you can say on balance, if they play that game 10 more times, maybe UAB probably wins because they only lost by a touchdown after turning it over four times. But still,
well, I'm sure Western Kentucky would like to say that about who they play, the FCS team that they lost to in the first week.
Yeah.
Like you said, footballs bounce funny.
Yeah. So you add all that up and they're 3-1, but against a schedule where their four opponents combined have two wins against FBS teams. And those two wins are Western Kentucky's win against UAB and their win against FIU. None of their other opponents have beaten an FBS team. So it's really hard to say.
What's the record of Rice's opponents right now? 5-0 Wake, 4-0 Baylor, 3-1 Texas, 3-1 Army.
Yeah. Yeah, the two
two losses to Michigan in overtime and LSU.
Yep.
I think that's different.
Well, you add in Louisiana Tech, and that ends one more loss to Texas. So yeah, Rice's five opponents combined have three losses, all to like top 15 teams. So,
which, not that second order wins guarantee you anything in the game of football, but it's worth noting that you can't just, especially at this point in the season when you're only a handful of games in, a record is not necessarily as definitive as it might seem. But in given that UAB, so you mentioned everything that the Blazers program has been through so far. They are 14-0 at home at Legion Field since restarting things. They haven't lost the game yet, and like one of us mentioned earlier, they did shut out Rice last year 42-0 at Rice Stadium. So there is that component. And then Bill Clark is probably one of the, I'd say, three or four most widely respected coaches in this conference, to the point where he's one of the guys when they talk about group of five coaches that are names are being floated around. I mean, people are already dreaming out, what if Nick Saban retires in, you know, like 3 or 4 years? Who are they going to pick to replace him? Well, maybe Bill Clark. He's already in the state. Like, I'm not saying Bill Clark is Nick Saban. He's not there yet. Nobody is there yet. But just to point out that coaching caliber wise, this is going to be one of the best coach teams that Rice is going to face this season.
Yeah, for sure. Even before the whole situation with the program getting shut down and them coming back, I mean, he got them to 6-6 in his, I guess it was his first or second season in 2014 when he was there. And they didn't end up going to a bowl game, but they would have been in one had the program not shut down. And that would have been, I think, UAB's second bowl game ever. So, you know, this is not just a case of using goodwill and momentum and hype to kind of ride the train after they got brought back. Like, if the program had not been shut down, they might be in an even better place right now. Yeah, you can't say enough about what that staff has done and what he has done as a head coach for them. So looking at the matchup at their stuff a little more closely. So I got one benefit of us recording later in the week is that I got a little more time to watch them coming in than I have for the other opponents. And their offense is, so the basic idea of it is one that is nothing new in college football, even going back a pretty long while. They, you know, they do it out of spread sets and the shotgun and usually 11 or 12 personnel. But basically what they want to do is they want to run the ball a lot. And then when your defense is flowing aggressively against the run, they're going to hit you over the top with play action. They have their running back, Spencer Brown, was one of the top runners in the conference last year. He's averaging almost 20 carries a game, which is not terribly common in college football anymore. And then you add on top of that, that the quarterback, Tyler Johnson, is running 10 times a game. So they are running the ball a lot.
And worth noting, Spencer Brown now is the leading rusher in school history and needs only, I think, 200 some odd yards to get to 3,000 yards rushing in his career, which is not bad for a guy who has been a part of a program that has been and not been.
The issue with that is as much talent as they lost last year, a lot of that was on the offensive line. And I think, is there any additional word? Their center was their one returning starter on the offensive line for this year, and he has been hurt. I don't know if there's any word on whether or not he's expected to play at this point.
I haven't seen anything yet, but Lee Dufour, he was on most of the preseason all-conference lists of whatever publication you'd like to look at. Senior leader, incredibly important as a very good football player, and just like you'd mentioned, him and Spencer Brown really are the guys that have the experience back on this team. So I haven't heard anything or seen anything coming out of Birmingham yet about him. Maybe we'll get something later in the week. If he is not able to go for UAB, that would be a huge, huge blow for them.
Right, because they're already not, like, they want to run the ball a lot. That's kind of the backbone of their offense. But Brown and Johnston are combined running it 30 times a game, and without adjusting for, I haven't gone through the box scores and adjusted for sacks with Johnston, but they're combined running it 30 times a game and both separately averaging 3.4 yards a carry. So even with they run a lot of option plays, just a lot of like basic zone read stuff. Nothing wrong with basic. You can do a lot with that play if you have a mobile enough quarterback, but even with that stuff, they're just not real efficient at all on the ground with that revamped offensive line. So if Dufour can't go, I think you have to look at it as a real advantage for Rice in the trenches when UAB has the ball. So most of their effectiveness of come on offense is actually from Johnston throwing the ball. And they, like I said, they do that a lot off play action and a lot and a fair amount of RPOs. And they'll look to hit shots over the top. They're very, very aggressive with the shots they call off play action. And that's worked a lot of times. But it's also not worked a lot of times because Johnson's already thrown 6 interceptions on the season, including 4. Like I said, when we were talking about the schedule, he threw 4 last week against Western Kentucky.
Yeah, and I mean, you talk about where conversely Rice's starting quarterback has thrown 0. He missed the game, and I guess maybe chalk up half a game of him not playing with Tom Stewart in. But comparison-wise, That's a win in Rice's pocket, at least from a matchup perspective. And on the other side, what Western Kentucky has faced, what UAB has faced, Western Kentucky, who beat them last week, had their backup quarterback in after their starter had gotten lost for the season and was still able to get enough points against a very stingy UAB defense to move. So quarterback wise, Western just beat UAB. Maybe I'm channeling my inner Western into Rice.
Yeah,
do whatever you need to do. But UAB hasn't faced a quarterback that has really been able to, I'm not gonna say pick them apart, but really threaten them through the air, which I think we've seen moments where we kind of thought Wiley could do that, and we really I've only kind of seen parts and pieces of him putting it all together, but optimistic that if he can hold on, control the football and make wise decisions in the passing game, then, I mean, him versus Tyler Johnston, you could argue that Rice is in a good position there.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing with Johnson is that you can go and read my film room if you haven't, when you're listening to this, but the thing is, and I'm not, I don't want to be too mean to the kid, because so many college quarterbacks are like this. It takes a really advanced level of we can pick it apart so easily and say, like,
Tua's don't grow on trees.
Yeah, exactly. Because the main issue with Johnson's game is that he just doesn't get the ball out on time. You can see it in because they have so many deep throws, so many shots off play action. In almost all of his dropbacks that I watched, he would get to the end of the dropback and he would bounce back on his back foot and then just kind of sit there for a little bit. And he would wait for the route to come open and wait for his guy to get fully into his break, and then he would throw the ball. And again, I don't want to be too hard on it, but like, that will kill you as a quarterback. The ball has to come out on time. And there were so many situations where, you know, I highlighted two plays in that film room, and in one of them, that was a rollout, so it's a bit of a different situation, but he got to the top of that, got to the end of that rollout and had his receiver open and hesitated a little bit, but still got it out in time and drove the ball far enough downfield that with his guy having a couple of steps on the safety, he was able to get it in, and his receiver didn't have to slow up too much, and it ended up being a long touchdown. But the second play was his first interception, and they're taking a play action shot, and he's trying to hit the slot receiver on a post route, and there were no underneath routes to occupy any of the other defenders. So the middle linebacker takes a bit of a step up on the run action, and then after he realizes it's play action, he bails back into the middle hook zone, and then there's no inside vertical route on the other side of the field. So the strong safety reads his eyes and starts breaking on the ball as soon as he throws it, while the free safety is the guy who has the slot receiver and is covering over the top of that route. If Johnson throws that ball so that it's getting to the receiver as he's coming out of his break, it's a much easier throw. He probably hits the guy in stride, and then he's able to run in between the safeties and get it all the way to a touchdown. As it is, he waits till well after the receiver is out of his break to throw the ball. The linebacker is all the way back in his zone and undercuts the ball and intercepts it. If the linebacker hadn't been there, the strong safety was in between him and the receiver, so the strong safety probably makes the interception. So functionally, you have a play that if the ball gets out on time, he's got an open receiver for a touchdown. As it is, the receiver was basically triple covered by the ball by the time the ball got there. And again, that sounds really harsh. I want to reiterate that being able to get that ball out on time to have anticipation is really how that tends to be referred to when you're talking about quarterbacks. To be able to get the ball to your receivers before they're looking for you, before they look open, before they're even into their breaks on like a vertical release with a post route like that. That is a rare skill, and that takes a rare level of processing and timing and ability. So there are not a whole lot of college quarterbacks that are capable of doing that, especially, and Johnson's only a sophomore. So, to do what I always do and reference an Alabama quarterback, you see Jalen Hurts doing these amazing things at Oklahoma. He was not that good when he was a freshman. It took him time to get there. And the number one thing you'll hear Alabama fans say all this time about, he was, you know, one read and run, or he couldn't go through his progressions and all this stuff.
Now, Carter, you can't be preaching patience to sports fans, can you?
I know. It's completely wild here. The number one thing that held Jalen back as a passer his freshman and really his sophomore year, because his freshman year was a whole cobbled together spread option offense that Lane Kiffin just put together on the fly, basically, because they didn't think he was going to be the quarterback. His sophomore year, the thing that held him back was that he couldn't anticipate windows and anticipate throws and get the ball out to his first read on time. So this is a rare skill that not a lot of quarterbacks have in college. And I think you can fairly definitively say that Tyler Johnson doesn't have it. And so when you have a quarterback like that and you're making these throws, these aggressive throws downfield, you're going to throw a lot of interceptions. It's just going to happen. And I think the Rice defensive backs need to be prepared to be in tight coverage and watch the quarterback when they're, you know, in their zones and stuff like that, when they're in zone coverage, and be ready to break on that ball, because there will be opportunities for interceptions.
Yeah, when you mentioned the downfield aspect of that coverage, I think there's another point. And this is, I think, when we talk about not, I know we promised we put the Louisiana Tech game to bed, but if we're going to go back and look a little, I think something that Louisiana Tech did well moving to the second half is the offense, and Jamar Smith took a lot more shorter drops, quick releases, easy passes that weren't longer five-step, seven-step drops, look back and try and attack deep downfield. The first half, I felt like Smith, they tried to go more vertical, but there was so much pressure by that pass rush that it resulted in a lot of sacks and a lot of quarterback hits. And that's something for Johnson to pay attention to, because you mentioned him holding on the ball and not releasing as quick as he possibly can. If you do that so far, if you do that against this Rice defense, especially what we saw against them in against conference opponents, like, you could get your head taken off. And that's going to be bad from the pass rush standpoint. And now if you add a quarterback holding onto the ball too long, who's getting rushed and hurried and pushed out of the pocket and uncomfortable, then you're taking a situation where the throw was already going to be difficult to get it 30 yards down the field on target. Now it's getting to a degree of difficulty where, you know, you're talking, I mean, he's a sophomore. That's going to be hard. It would be hard for any quarterback to be able to make throws under that kind of pressure.
Right. Yeah. So I think that just all gets to what I ultimately feel is that this is really a very good schematic matchup for the Rice defense, because you're facing a team that wants to run the ball but can't really do it well efficiently, which goes great with Rice's really aggressive, really good run defense. And then you have a team that wants to push the ball downfield off longer developing deep play action shots against a team that's pretty good at covering when the receivers aren't Wake Forest or Texas's receivers, and is pretty good at getting to the quarterback against offensive lines of comparable talent. So as UAB wants to run its offense, I think you have a fair amount of optimism, which is not surprising with a conference foe as well as Rice's defense have played. I think you have a lot of confidence that Rice's defense can really get the job done in this game, because the matchup is very good for them, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this is not to the same degree of running that we saw against Army, but this was kind of the same thing we talked about, that schematically, if you could design an opponent that this defense is built to stop, this is it. You're not going to get a outside of a triple option team, somebody who's going to run the ball 40 to 50 times in a game, but UAB is going to run the ball 30 to 40. And they're going to take a couple more deep shots. And the theory is that Johnson's going to be more accurate than whoever, you know, a triple option team would put under center to throw those passes. But UAB is, I think the way that I see it is, Rice is an offense that runs to run. UAB is an offense that runs to pass. And if you can take away one of those components, it sets up really well for Rice, because UAB does not want to and cannot survive throwing 40 times a game. They want to be able to run and set that up. So if you can pull one of those components away, and we talked about Bo Spencer Brown and Tyler Johnson averaging just over 3 yards a carry, this is an offense that is not as explosive as what Rice has already tried to cover, maybe it'd be Baylor or Wake Forest or something like that, even Louisiana Tech. So on both sides of the front and the back of the defense, Rice stacks up pretty well.
And going over to the other side of the ball, UAB returns more talent there. They have generally played well on defense. They're top 15 in the country in total and scoring defense, they're top 12 in rushing defense. So over the stats are very good. Now, none of those are opponent or tempo adjusted. And I was actually really interested to look at sort of the advanced stats, because both of the systems that are now at ESPN, Bill Connelly's SP Plus has them 38th in defense, which I was very surprised by, that it was that high considering the schedule they played. But then if you go into the FBI page and look at the defensive efficiency, they're like 88th. So the schedule for this team on defense so far has been so toothless, shall we say, that Even the advanced systems don't really know quite what to make of them. They definitely return more playmakers on that side of the ball than they do on the offense. Both of the linebackers are very good, I think. So it's not going to be... I think they're going to pose a challenge to the Rice running game. And so I do think this is going to be a week where it's going to be... They're going to need Wiley and they're going to need the passing game to make some plays to open things up. So, you know, I think we've seen enough from Brad Rosner and Austin Trammell probably to be able to count on those guys to make some plays. But you would love to see, you know, for this to be the week where Knipe or Bailey really makes an explosive play to kind of take the top off, because I think you're probably looking at another low scoring one here, just based on the fact that both of these teams are probably better defensively than they are offensively. So in a game like that, all it takes is one play. You know, you reduce the number of plays, you run the ball a lot, you reduce the number of possessions, which I think is certainly going to be the case in this game from both teams' perspective. That increases the variance. And when the higher your overall variance is, the more one play can make a difference. So I would love for this to be the week that, you know, just get something where they, you know, clear a guy out and isolate, you know, Knipe on a safety or something like that, and just hit a long pass to him over the top that gets him a touchdown. And maybe that ends up being the difference in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've talked about the Rice staff and players have said by far the biggest difference between shifting from Conference USA play to from the non-conference play has been speed, and the speed of the game and the quickness of the athletes that are on the field. And UAB, no disrespect to Western Kentucky, but they are far from the more of the talented teams in Conference USA. They are in a rebuild and working through stuff and kind of trying to rebuild the roster in a similar way to, you know, what Rice is working through right now. But Rice has the advantage of having guys like Knipe and Jake Bailey that have that next level speed that can do something like that. So if you can get Knipe with the ball moving in space, that's something that the UAB defense that you can't simulate speed. You can do a lot of film work and prep work and do things with a scout team to be ready for the style of offense that Rice runs, but you can't recreate a player that can do that. So if Bailey can, and I think I'm optimistic that we're going to see him get to a flash something to some degree, because he would be that extra piece that, you're right, if you can get a breakaway touchdown that lowers the, we talked about Rice and third down and doing those extended drives. You don't need to have every drive extended if you can have one big play. And Rice's offense is never going to cater themselves to try and chase that one big play, but if you can find it, it's going to help, undoubtedly. And then on the, circling back a little bit, you talked about the defensive front seven and for UAB and what that's going to look like. I thought this was interesting that UAB they were a very veteran senior team last year, and the vast majority of those guys have left and moved on. But there are a handful of redshirt seniors that are still with the program. And I wanted to highlight Garrett Marino, defensive lineman, has had a really just a bizarre and interesting journey. If you want weird college football stories, go Google him and his journey from walking on and blue shirting and all those sorts of things. But he is just turned 25 in August.
Oh, he's on the Case Keenum plan.
I'm trying to think. The Aston Walter is probably the oldest player on the Rice roster,
I would assume, yeah.
Six-year senior, and he just turned 23 in August. So UAB doesn't have, I mean, last year I feel like they literally had two dozen 25 and 24-year-olds playing on both sides of the ball. They do not this year, which is good, but Garrett Marino is going to be somebody that if this offensive line is going to have to work and make sure that they can be fundamentally sound and be paying attention, he is someone that is going to be and can be a difference maker just with the sheer, I mean, 6'2", 290 with a good amount of power behind him. He can create problems up the middle.
Yeah. Any last thoughts on UAB? I think for me, it's just, you know, like I said, this is probably going to be another tight defensive battle. Like I said, I really like the matchup for Rice when Rice is on defense. And then on offense, you know, they don't need to be dominant like they were those first two drives against Louisiana Tech every single time. They just need just clean up some of those mistakes they had that kept them from being effective over most of the rest of the game. And then so that, you know, you can maybe get a couple of those drives like you did in the beginning of the game against Louisiana Tech, and then just have one, maybe two times where you can hit a big play over the top that gets you in a good position to score points.
Yeah, and what Rice failed to do after their hot start last week is if you can get that one play that is able to put things seemingly out of reach, when Rice was up 14-7 and driving, if you can get that one more, that next point, that next touchdown, that next field goal, if you go up into the second half against UAB and you're leading 21-7, that's a lot more, I'm not going to say insurmountable, but that's a lot more challenging mentally for this offense that hasn't done it against a defense that is capable and has proven themselves to be as talented as Rice has so far. So I think that's one thing. And then, you know, I'm not going to say that folks that beat writers and the like that cover the team are the end all be all, or we know what we're talking about, but I have been kind of curious, and I've been just working around and talking with folks that do cover UAB on a regular basis and just saying, I know what the numbers say, and I know these folks who's been on their schedule, and just kind of getting a gut check and just kind of a pulse around folks in and around Birmingham about how they feel about this team and how confident they are. And there's a healthy amount of skepticism among folks that know UAB and have covered them as well as anybody that this team is and how good they are. And there's not a lot of confidence that this is going to be a game where, yeah, UAB won 42-0 last year, but I don't get the sense that there's anyone in Birmingham that believes that that's anywhere close to what this game is going to be. Folks on both sides of the fence seem to think it's going to be pretty hard fought, and there's a lot of respect for what Rice has done so far this season, even without the success. Carter, you brought up the FPI and what it's done. It hasn't really had, you know, from what the numbers look at statistically, Rice has not been able to finish, and there hasn't been a lot for FPI to love. But Rice, at least defensively, stacks up pretty well comparably. I think they're right at around 100 with UAB being in the mid-80s on that point. So it's going to be a physical game. And, you know, we talked about 17 points might not be projected to be enough to beat Louisiana Tech, but 17 points might be enough to beat UAB. And not to say that we should settle for that. We should obviously try and go score 100 if we can. But if the offense can get going just enough, this is going to be an evenly matched fight for Rice.
Absolutely. And then like a last note on UAB, like I think it is absolutely fair to be kind of skeptical of them given the way they have played against the schedule they have played so far. I certainly am myself. I don't think that's any kind of indictment on them as a program or on the coaching staff or on anything that they're doing. Like I said, when we first started talking about them, they're just in such a weird situation with the state of their roster and kind of the point they are in restarting this program. So even if for them, this, all fingers crossed, if Rice can pull this one out, and if they, you know, have a really down season in CUSA, I don't think that really is a reflection on what they are or where they are. I think they are still on a very upward trajectory. It's just that this season is such a weird place to be in.
Yeah, and we talk about expectations are key, right? UAB was still picked to finish third in the West despite not getting any first place votes. I think Louisiana Tech was fourth and they got two. July seems so long ago at this point. But to have the respect and have people to pick you to be one of the better teams in the conference, even as young as they are. I mean, this was the point where a lot of teams that are turning to as many freshmen and sophomores and guys that haven't seen on-field production yet, they don't get picked to finish third in conference. So they might not have proven a lot on the field, but this is a very well-coached team that is talented and is going to be challenging, especially at home. So we think Rice is prepared, and this should be a game. But this is, again, not that Rice is looking lightly on anyone on their schedule, but definitely not someone to look past just because they're not the same UAB team that won the conference last year.
All right. Well, I think I'm just about done. Is anything you got? Anything else before we wrap up for the week?
One more game, and then we get a little bit of a break. Schedule is a bit weird with two off weeks this year with how the calendar falls. But remember, if you have any questions for us about the program, about whatever else is going on in the world of Rice sports, there is a lot right now that we have not gotten to all of it. Go ahead and shoot them in. You can find us at theroost.com and on Twitter at theroostpod. And you can always email us at podcast@theroost.com. Send us in your questions throughout this week. We'll record sometime after the UAB game. We haven't quite finalized that yet, but then we'll just do a little mailbag and QA and answer some of y'all's questions. So that's the last thing from us. And then until then, I think we're ready to sign off until one more game in Birmingham.
Yep. That'll do it for this week. So we'll see y'all back for that review and the mailbag next week. And Rice Fight.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.